Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from Lighthouse Hockey and the Fans First Sports Network. My name is Dan Saraceni. Joining me on this Sunday afternoon by Zencaster is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, you can call it staving off elimination. You can call it the start of a comeback. You can call it a stay of execution. But the Islanders finally get one over on the Hurricanes, 3-2 in double overtime on Matt Barzal's tip-in Saturday afternoon. This is obviously, you know, was a great way to go out, I guess, in UBS Arena if this is, you know, their only win of the series, but they've pushed the series back to Raleigh for game five. And my question to you is, how did all of this affect your birthday on Saturday? I'm assuming it made it a lot better than had they would have lost that game.
Yeah. The old 2 o'clock start, not the best,
seriously,
the best thing to throw at a birthday, especially if it's going to go 4 hours, but, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can look at it any way you want. I think that's the beauty of a series win, especially when you have your back against the wall, or winning a series, I should say. Because to me, I was looking at it as the opportunity to give myself two more days to believe in this team, and you know, like to kind of enjoy the just being alive. Having your hockey season still alive for another couple of days, and then come Tuesday night, I look at that one as an opportunity to put, you know, to ship the series back to what would be a really raucous UBS Arena crowd, I think, for Game Six. So I'm kind of looking at it that way. I know that the cliches came out right away after the loss in Game Three of you know, one game at a time, win a period, win a shift, can't win four in a row in one night. All that stuff came out, but it's not just for players. It's also for fans. I mean, you think about it as a fan and you're like, oh God, like there's no way you can win. We can beat these guys four games in a row, especially because two of them will be down there and, you know, whatever. But if you look at it as, oh, if they win this game, the season is guaranteed to last a couple more days because they got a couple of days off. And then they play another hockey game that night. And if they find a way to win that hockey game, all of a sudden the pressure kind of gets ratcheted up on the Hurricanes. So I was just looking at it like that, like these little stepping stones from a fan's perspective of just keeping the season alive, enjoying that, not trying to take it for granted, not thinking about the off season for a couple more days, which is I appreciate. And then come Tuesday, it'll be, you know, I'll look at it, like I said, similarly, win this game. And all of a sudden you get to come back to UBS Arena for what would be a great game. So I'm trying to do that as best I can. You know, there's times when your mind drifts and you're like, oh, what's even the point or whatever. But as long as I think with the way they won that game too, if the Islanders do take this series into the deep end of the pool, right, 6 or 7, the way that they won that one, game four, I think is pretty beneficial, right? Like they had their backs against the wall and one goal would eliminate them again. They fought through it, won, and I don't know. There does seem to be a little bit of belief in the team, but yeah, just one shift at a time, I guess, is how I'm trying to look at all of this.
Well, there's a reason that cliches are what they are. There is an amount of truth to them, and I was definitely on the what's the point train when they lost Game Three. You know, there was a couple of days left. We're going to talk about that again in a few minutes, but. You know, Game Four, I thought, put me back on the, okay, well, now it's one game at a time. And if they can win in Raleigh in Game Five, which I think Butch Goring said they did last year, which I had completely forgotten about, then you set up another Game Six. And, you know, they would probably, I'm assuming the Islanders would want to avenge their painful loss in Game Six at UBS in overtime that they've had to sit on now for a year. Fortunately, Paul Stastny retired, so we don't have to worry about him coming out and doing this. It'll be somebody else. But, you know, I thought Game Four was very much in line. And like you said, you know, how they played that game was good. That was very much in line with Games 1 and 3, in which the Islanders, you know, did kind of hang with the Hurricanes for the most part, except for just a couple of mistakes that end up in the back of their net, which is sort of how they always play with these guys. Before we dive into these, reminder that we are on Patreon. Patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety. Membership means ad-free episodes, bonus podcasts, written posts, and a whole lot more all year long. So sign up today, patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety. So we might as well start with game four. That was the more positive one. And then we can look back at game three, which was kind of a disaster. But I thought, you know, they played okay. The deserve to win-o-meter was squarely in the Hurricanes' favor. But they started out poorly. Andersley takes a penalty. Seth Jarvis pulls a rebound out of a pile, and it's 1-0 Hurricanes. And you thought, okay, here we go. And, you know, for a long time, it was a lot of the same. The Islanders played okay, but the Hurricanes would, you know, counterattack and get a scoring chance. And you thought, okay, well, Anderson's doing his thing. They're doing their thing. The Islanders are doing their thing. This is just going to end in a sweep. But then late in the period, Matt Barzal shakes Brady Shea, scores while Anderson isn't even looking from distance. Wasn't the greatest goal he'd given up, but sometimes that's all it takes. It ties the game. And all of a sudden, you know, the Islanders have a lot of life. And third period, I thought was very even. JG Pageau scored off the power play right off the bat, makes it 2-1. Stefan Nason scores his power play goal to tie the game. But the Hurricanes didn't dominate. They didn't get their, like, Hurricanes-type shifts that we talked about when we last talked about Game 2. And I thought, you know what? Maybe the Islanders do have a chance here. Of course, they go to overtime. This is, you know, the worst possible scenario. My best friend Gio texts me, and he's like, ugh. And I'm like, yeah, tell me about it. I know. But and, of course, the Hurricanes get one of their Hurricanes-like shifts in the first overtime. It's kind of scary, but the Islanders get out of it without giving up a goal. And then early in the second overtime, Matt Barzal tips a shot from easily the least likely primary assist getter of the season, Robert Bortuzzo. No offense to Matt Barzal, who was absolutely brilliant all game long and seemed to want to will the Islanders to take that game. But I was desperate for this to be Bortuzzo's goal. Like, I just so right. Like, weren't we all just begging, please show the replay. Please show that Barzal didn't get a piece of that puck, because I wanted this to be Bortuzzo's goal. Barzal got it. He, you know, we had an exchange with our friend Arthur Staple, apparently, in the locker room. Like, come on, of course I got it. And it, again, he was brilliant. He deserved that goal. But man, how awesome would it have been for Robert Bortuzzo, of all people, to score the double overtime game winning goal against the Hurricanes to give the Islanders life.
Oh God, that was a moment made for Islander fans, I thought. You know, like, it's just right. Perfect. And I really wish the camera just panned to Lou right after the score. Like, the celebration's great, but I wish the camera just panned to Lou, and right. He just had the same look that he always has on his face, you know, just the, like, somebody at church, right. You know, kind of bored while there's a homily going on or something. Just so nice. And there's been a lot of people joking with us on Twitter all season long about the Bortuzzo Weird Islander episode that is clearly destined to come. And it just became an absolute classic with with that. And the game itself too, like, it felt like it was after the goal was scored to win it, and how it was scored, it was like, oh no, I should have saw that coming. I should have saw it coming, because of course, Bortuzzo takes that penalty late, and you're like, God damn it. Like, that was a dumb penalty. I understand what his thinking was. It looked like Slavin was going to get in on a breakaway, and he's just like, I'm just going to take this penalty. Maybe you just never know if they won't call it, or it will kill the penalty. But I guess he didn't realize Palmieri was with him or something. And so you're kind of like mad at him. And because of the way this first overtime ended, everything was a little jumbled because Pelech and Lee were in the box. So Bortuzzo was out there, I believe, with Alex Romanov, which is so funny to think about. And it's that when that puck kind of just like was sliding towards Bortuzzo, who was cocked back for that slap shot, seemed like, you know, video game style. You're just like waiting for the puck. And one of those moments where your kind of whole fandom flashes before your eyes, and you just see, you have like a moment of clarity or something, and it finds the back of the net. Like you, I was in my I was in Isla's playroom again watching this game, I was like, yes, Bortuzzo, and Emily's like, oh, who scored? I was like, I'm pretty sure it was Robert Bortuzzo. She's like, I don't know who that is. And I was like, yeah, you don't need to. You just don't need to know who it is. You're never going to need to know who Robert Bortuzzo is, right? It was just, what a good moment it was. And I tried desperately not to even think about what the series is like or anything, and just enjoy it. And I think I did actually a pretty good job of that. And I've feel like I've given my chance myself an opportunity to not really believe. It's not like that, you know, kind of like, oh, everybody who makes a playoff has a chance kind of cliche belief. It's more of a, you know, like we were saying that I'm going to follow the script here. I'm believing in the process to rip an annoying cliche from the books, but to give yourself an opportunity to trust that if they do win another game, and if you just look at it as one game to play another one, it becomes less daunting. And yeah, we got Robert Bortuzzo and Semyon Varlamov and Matt Barzal, of course. Like, he was so good. And I think he has, like, when teams go down 0-3, I feel a lot of times you'll see kind of like a jagged effort more than anything. Like, some of the players are kind of like, what's going through it? Like, what's the point? And and others are like what Barzal was doing, dragging his team into the fight all night. And I feel like Barzal's reputation unfairly from around the league would be like, most people would just assume he'd be the former kind of player, the guy who's not gonna dig into the corners, throw a body. Mitch Marner, for example, right? Like, like Mitch Marner's been playing and he's getting yelled at and roasted or whatever.
Right.
But Barzal is really not that player. He's hitting people. He's digging pucks out of corners. The man is like, I think Butchie was like, I don't know how he's any energy left. And I felt the same way. He's like such a, you know, a joy to watch because of the way he plays, but also because you're watching a guy who is, we make this joke a lot, right? The biggest Islander fans on the planet. It's people who listen to podcasts like these, Matt Barzal and Patrick Watt. Like, those are the biggest Islander fans on the planet. So it's almost like one of our own out there fighting the good fight. Barzal, Bortuzzo, Varlamov were so good all night. It was at one in a season where you just we've spent so much time muddling around in from rock bottom to rock bottom. It was nice to get a moment to remember, like, oh, why you what right. what joy feels like, fan joy, and we got those guys to thank for it.
Yeah, and it was pretty obvious that UBS was waiting for something like that. The place went obviously absolutely ballistic, and they were in good spirits all night. They were, you know, anytime the Islanders got even a little bit of offensive pressure, people started buzzing. Yeah. And they
were trying to get better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. I know. As soon as they went down 1-0, I expected people to be like, oh, the hell with this.
People were talking about like the ticket prices going way down and all sorts of stuff, like, which is, yeah, of course, like they're down 0-3. Look at the way when people were piling on other Islander fans for like not going to the game or selling tickets, like, how could you be, how could anybody catch any sort of criticism for selling their tickets to that game after what this team has put us through?
I know.
I didn't have tickets and I was like, I couldn't go. It would have taken like a lot of logistics on my own end for like babysitting, et cetera. And I was like, I'm just not going to get there. It's not worth the effort. And it's true. Like those guys they still have a lot of work to do to earn everybody's kind of like die on the shield mentality back. So one win is certainly helpful, like that, and especially the way they did it, like that definitely helps. But I don't blame anybody for not wanting to go to that game after how the series has played out and the season has played out.
Yeah, this season has really brought about an argument that I didn't expect to happen, which is sort of like blind faith versus like, this is not what I want out of this, you know? And so almost like self-preservation, like, you know, it's one thing. Listen, we're all Islanders fans. Like, for all the complaining that we've done all year long and even all last year and throughout the last 8 years, we're still here, right? Like, we're still watching this team. We're still talking about them. They still dominate our thought processes every 5 minutes, you know, when it's quiet. So it's not like we're not fans, but, you know, we want the team to be better than they've been. And this season is, I mean, anybody who doesn't think this season has been a roller coaster of emotions just isn't paying attention. Like, there's just, you know, one time, sometimes they look great, sometimes they don't. Sometimes they look great and lose. Sometimes they, you know, we haven't had any, like, they look bad, and we had, actually, what am I talking about? We had a whole bunch of look bad and wins in the early in the season, you know, the loser point sort of section. So it's been a lot to take in. And if anybody wanted to get off the ride, I couldn't possibly blame them. It's like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, let's go boys, when I have an entire season's worth, if not multiple seasons worth of, you know, being let down to kind of draw back on. But yeah,
to go back to the World War One analogy, this is kind of, it's kind of like the beginning, like how soldiers were in the beginning of World War One, where they're like, oh, it's romantic and it's war and it's all this, like, you know,
I do my part. Like,
yeah, exactly. I do my part. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then by the time it's like 1918 and you've been in the trenches for two or 3 years, you're like, what is, are you kidding me? I got to do this again. Like, there's no point. Why to watch Seth Jarvis score a power play goal again, like to watch this guy, like Anders Lee takes a bad penalty after the Islanders have a good push through the first 6 minutes. And now I got to watch the Hurricanes celebrating again. I'm not going over the top. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's, you know, to steal another cliche, we've all seen some shit. Like, we've all seen some shit. And so if you've reached your limit, I wouldn't be surprised. But that being said, you know, I'm definitely not sad that I watched that game. You know, I missed most of it because I was out with a buddy of mine, and I came home just in time to watch the third period, the first overtime, and then, you know, the second overtime for as long as it was. I don't even know what minute Barzal scored in, but it was early. It's actually, that was the 10th longest overtime game in Islanders playoff history. So, which is obviously very decorated, and ain't nobody touching the first one, that's for sure, for a long time. But it was a good game. You mentioned Varlamov before. He was fantastic. Freddie Anderson was really good, too. Varlamov, 42 saves. Anderson, 32. So, like, you know, they were busy, and it was a real back and forth. You know, sometimes the deserve-to-win-o-meter isn't telling you the whole story, and I thought the Islanders actually played pretty well in that game. Lee, and the sad thing about Lee's penalty was, like, he's been great all series long, which, again, he's sort of turned back the fountain of youth a little bit. Ryan Pulock had a really, really good game. Butch was talking him up. You know, Pierre Engvall sometimes looks okay. You know, sometimes he's engaged, sometimes he's not. But, I can't believe we forgot. Matt Martin sat in this game, and Ruslan Isakov was in. Didn't get much ice time, particularly in overtime. I mean, he's a rookie. I wouldn't expect that much. But, you know, that was kind of a subplot. And at first it was like, okay, let's – time to save the season, Ruslan, but he didn't really factor in all that much in the game. But I mean, you know, it's so funny how, for all the overtime losses we've seen this team take, you know, I still get a thrill when the Islanders go to overtime, because historically speaking, that's been their time. But it was great. And again, like I said off the top, I don't know if I really articulate this, but it was nice that UBS got that moment, you know, that sort of victorious moment. There hasn't been a lot. Their home record is kind of spotty. I mean, if you were at that game and then at the no shows against Calgary and the Devils and what else, you know, like, this was the counterpoint to that. And so everybody can go home happy, which is nice. And there were a number of Hurricanes fans in the building who didn't go home happy at all. So that's good too. But we should talk a little bit about game three, which was the opposite in a lot of ways. You know, I thought the Islanders played okay in this one, but it ended up being a 3-2 Hurricanes win. You know, we don't need to go through everything, but the lasting image from this game is going to be that of a pulled Ilya Sorokin sitting sullenly in a tunnel at UBS Arena while the game goes on out in front of him. He let up 3 goals, and they pulled him, and Varlamov came in and was fine, but he didn't have a whole lot of work after he came in. You know, it looked like the Islanders might get a shot at kind of tying it up, but they just didn't. There was a lot of pressure in the third, but they just didn't get any goals, and that was it. There was a couple of big glove saves from Anderson too. But that image of Sorokin sitting in that tunnel on a folding chair, you know, just kind of going over where it's all gone wrong, is really a shame. And it really, I don't want to say it went viral, but a lot of people saw it. They talked about it on 32 Thoughts, for example, and Elliot Friedman was talking about how this is a project now, and his contract extension and $8.5 million is kicking in next year. He's going to have to work with Mitch Korn and Piero Greco to get back on track, maybe work with no pucks, that sort of thing. They keep talking about how, you know, having Wah as your coach is a great thing for goalies, but then Wah talks and he's like, no, I leave it up to the goalie coaches. So I don't know how much the Patrick Wah factor is here. I still think that Sorokin's just gassed after a season of a ton of work. The Islanders still don't play a particularly, you know, staunch brand of defense, even when they win. So I don't know. I'm just kind of diagnosing it from my couch here, but this was brutal. And I mean, we're both Sorokin fans. There's a lot of fans out there. What did you think about that very sad picture of him kind of sitting in the tunnel there while the rest of the game went on, probably praying for them to actually pull the win out here and get him off the hook, but never materialized. But it's pretty powerful when you think about it. Whoever took that picture kind of really set things forward in a lot of different ways.
That game was, I was there, and that game was tough to just like sit through. Because if you could feel, you can, like, I didn't see the picture until I saw Desmond in between the second and third period. He showed it to me, and I was like, oh my God. Because you could kind of feel that in the building even before it came. Like, nobody was trusted Sorokin after the second goal went in, and you're like, oh boy, he probably just doesn't have it, and it's maybe not going to finish this game. And then you see the picture, and you know, there's been a bunch of pictures, I think, that have really kind of captured the season. And in a weird way for me, like the one that has always stuck out is Simon Holmstrom helping Robert Bortuzzo off the ice. Cause I'm just like, these are two guys from completely different hockey backgrounds and play different positions, different kind of skill sets, and both had probably never considered that they'd be a New York Islander before they were acquired by the Islanders from different ways. And here is Simon Holmstrom helping a guy, probably a complete stranger, and even though they now work for the same company, off the ice. So I always thought that was like the image of the season, and then that got supplanted by this Sorokin picture, which, I mean, it's the annoying thing about it was that after the game, you knew everyone was kind of prepared for what was going to come, the discourse, and they gotta figure out what to do with him before his trade, his contract kicks in and there's no movement clause. Like, they probably just bounce back. Like, nobody knows. Nobody has any idea what is going to happen in hockey ever. Like, nobody has any idea how this goalie will play game to game, period to period, season to season. That's part of the reason we love the sport. And so I don't even want to even get into that, but it was just heartbreaking because he seems like the most affable guy. Like, there doesn't seem to be there's no ego to him at all, which is, you know, crazy considering a lot of people thought he should have won the Vezina last season. When you look at his stats and such, and like the Islanders, more than Sorokin, I think like the team and perhaps the former coaching staff or coach deserve as much blame for that picture coming into existence than he does, because the guy just saw so much volume and throughout that first half of the season that he just kind of came undone a bit. And I was saying in the intermission too, like, this is probably the first time that in his professional career that he struggled. You look at his KHL numbers, they were always ridiculous. Up until basically midpoint of this season, he'd been really good in the NHL. He was pitching a shutout every four starts in his hockey career. And now he's struggling for the first time. So he'll find a way through it. This is why the Varlamov extension has been a decent a tidy piece of business, if you will. I mean, it was a tough game just in general, because before that game, I really didn't want to get my hopes up or my juices flowing too much, because it felt like it would have been forced. You were talking about that kind of manufactured level of enthusiasm compared to legitimate. So I met up with a couple people before the game, that's my friend Greg and Frank, and it felt the same, right? Like, all of us were there, almost. It was almost like we were there because we had to be there.
Right.
There was none of that like playoff buzz in the air yet, and they had to earn that. Like, you have to earn. Look, if they get to game six, I will be there hours before with and all sorts of stuff, but they just need to earn that. And it felt like that. It felt like a lot of people being like trying as much as they can to suppress that manufactured optimism and belief, and just it wouldn't have been genuine. And then the crowd was really good. Like, the opening montage. One of my favorite parts of every season when they make the playoffs is like the little hype video that they show before the team hits the ice. The Islanders always do a good job with that, going back to 2002 when my first playoff game ever. I remember the Ryan Smith year when I can like almost script out that hype video for you. And so it was in a weird way, like I went to this game just to watch that video and I could have gone home. I was like, I know how this game's going to end. It was so obvious how that game was going to end. Also, like the Islanders were not going to get the tying goal. It felt like that game could have gone on for days and they wouldn't.
The video was the best part, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The video, the anthem was great.
Yeah.
And then that was that because, like, and even if the Islanders had tied it up, like the Hurricanes were just going to answer. Like it was just that much of an obvious game, and leaving the arena was, I wasn't the only one doing it, but like my dad and I kind of felt the same way. Like it kind of felt almost like a relief that the at that point we're like, oh, they're done. Mm-hmm. You know, that just accepting that the season's going to end and whatever, like it felt kind of like a weight was lifted off your shoulders, and you almost forgot, like, oh man, they have other games to play. So
yeah,
it was a weird experience. And once again, like it's not on the fans to conjure up like some sort of push the team. Like it's not their job if the team isn't doing what they're supposed to. And they played all right in that game, but there was no signs that they were going to win it. So that's why it was tough.
Yeah, that really bothered me that going into that, we kept hearing from Lee, I think a few other guys from the team itself, like, oh yeah, we're drawing on the energy of the fans to win the game. It's like, well, dude, you know, if you guys can't get your energy up for a playoff game, I don't know what we can do to help you. Like, I don't, this really shouldn't be that hard. And I mean, a lot of that came from where game two left off, you know, and we talked about that in our last episode. Like that was game two right now is the only one where the Islanders haven't played well at all. Like that was, and it's ironic because they had a 3-0 lead. But again, it wasn't really like they were really pushing. They kind of came about them, and the Hurricanes just took the game back and ended up winning 5-3. And of course, you know, two goals in 9 seconds or whatever it was. So just an array of bad tastes were left in mouths all over the place, you know, after that game. And then coming into game three, it's like, you know, you want me to get my energy up to feed you, but you guys couldn't win a game where you had a 3-0 lead by just not playing like assholes for 30 minutes. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like that really kind of bugs me. And it's like, you know, they're not doing anything wrong. You know, every team does that kind of stuff, but it just rubbed me the wrong way. It was a very much like a read the room scenario. Like, come on, really? You know, what are we doing? I'm with you. Like, I thought they played okay in game three. Like they didn't play that poorly, but I think the Aho shot, you know, off the rush in the slot was all it took for Sorokin and Roth pulled him. And again, just sitting there. And I made this joke on Twitter too, like, that shot of him sitting there is like kind of a microcosm of how this Islanders team has felt for the last 3 years. And we've talked about this on this show a lot, where it feels like the NHL is happening and the Islanders are kind of off to the side in their own little kind of universe. And this is a perfect illustration of that. Like, here we are sulking and sullen and mad and frustrated and angry and confused. And meanwhile, there's still a game happening out there. Like, there's a lot going on that's not going to involve us. And all you can do is sit and kind of, you know, sit in your feelings and on a folding chair in a tunnel somewhere. So not great, but again, that's where, you know, game four comes in. Like you said, the energy was sort of weird going in, but coming out, it was brilliant. It was exactly what you want from an Islanders game. So we'll have to see where it goes from there. Any other notes from games three and four here before we take a break and come back and talk about game five, which is on.
Yeah. One of the other things is like how bizarre it is that these series, now the Islanders have got their third win against the Hurricanes in three playoff series.
Right.
So they're 3-11 overall. Oh, and I think this was part of the frustration with leaving game three was, like, I've seen that game so many times when these two teams have played, and you just got to find a way to win one of them. And or now you got to find a way to win a bunch of them. And it's incredibly exhausting to explain. We joke all the time about that Sabres series in 2007. That's the closest five game series you'll ever see. Like, the Islanders were wronged in it, and you get sick of trying to make that argument over and over and over again against the same team And, you know, like, oh, the Islanders were right in this series that they got swept in or lost in six in. And so the fact that they got one on the board was really nice. And I hope that part of the reason I'm really excited about Tuesday is I hope they win that game. I hope they put a little bit of fear into this fan base in Raleigh.
Oh, my God.
I'll tell you what, they deserve it. Like, I know they won a cup in 2006, but it's been 18 years since that one. And this iteration of Hurricanes fans have not gotten to the lofty heights that everyone projects them to. And so if the Islanders can win the game and force a game six on Thursday night somehow, I think that, yeah, the buttholes pucker up a bit down there. And they, if any fan base deserves that, it's this one. Like, they deserve to feel a little bit of anxiety, because they just seemingly not, there's no, there's hardly any, criticism or, barbs thrown in their direction. Somehow they escape it all despite, their failings come playoff time. And like, so, and you know what, too, it also delays the, us needing to become big Hurricane fans if they do win the series against the Rangers for a few more days. Like, I want to keep hating this team for as long as possible. So, if the Islanders can find a way to win on Tuesday and do all of that, then we're getting into snorting the hopium and all that stuff, because it's game six and seven, it's just two games. So, but they got to win Tuesday.
Yeah, just once, I'd love to see a game, or three, really. But I'll start with one where all the breaks go against the Hurricanes. Like, that, how great would that be? Like, you know, even if the Islanders don't play that well, just the kind of thing. I just want to hear a Hurricane or Rod Brind'Amour say, every mistake just ended up in the back of our net, because that's we didn't make a lot of mistakes, but they all ended up in the back of our net. I just want to hear that come out of somebody's mouth in a red and black jersey. I really do. So we got 4-6. This is, we've already played four now. So this is 14 playoff games against these guys, and we have not heard that one time.
It's and I want to also note, for game four, watching on TV, the camera angle was like kind of perfectly positioned at UBS, where you could see like the bench reactions to basically any little play. And boy, do those guys, like, just anytime someone's touched, that the whole bench jumps up and begging for calls. Brendan Moore's arms going up for icing calls. Like, the linesmen were rightfully, by the way, like getting it from the Islander crowd in game four. And you're like, what? Like, these guys are still doing this up 3-0. It's incredible to watch. And you say, like, you want to watch a Hurricanes game there, they don't get any bounces. I'll tell you when it comes the next round, when they used up all their luck on you used up all your luck on the team you shouldn't have used it up on.
God damn, like, it. You're right.
You could probably you could probably beat us without the gods here, man. Like, you're a much better team than the Islanders. Why are you using all your, aces in the hole? Why is Freddie Anderson's making three saves in the same series from his back? Like, save that stuff for the next round, guys. Mm. Come on.
Well, then it becomes, I want to hear a Ranger say, against either the Bruins or the Panthers or whatever. Yeah. So, we are going to talk about actually the Bruins and the Panthers in the next half when we discuss a couple other teams that are in 3-1 holes. But we are going to look at game five first in Raleigh on Tuesday and what we might be able to expect. But again, from the Islanders, who knows? And we'll talk about a couple other playoff series. So meet us on the other side. Thanks. And now a word from our sponsors. First is VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, jerseys, mugs, and more featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. Vintage Ice Hockey also carries our Al Arbor and the Island merch, and our portion of the sales always go directly to the Center for Dementia Research. Use the code ANXIETY20 to save 20% off an order of two items. That is VintageIceHockey.com. Try wines from the Pinot Project. They offer a rosé, a Pinot Grigio, and a Pinot Noir that was named a 2022 Top 100 Best Buy by Wine Enthusiast Magazine. All are delicious, priced at less than $15 a bottle, and available at local wine shops and at UBS Arena. Learn more at thepinotproject.com Please drink responsibly. So game five of the series is Tuesday night in Raleigh at 7:30. This has obviously not been a great spot for the Islanders so far this series, but again, they did win game five down there last time. I mean, I wish I can say, you know, what we would expect from these guys, but we don't know. So far, again, out of these four games, I thought they played pretty okay in at least three of them, you know, with a couple of bounces going against them in game one, and then in game two, you know, Sorokin just didn't have it. And, you know, even as it was, it just a couple of shots ended up again in the back of their net. Game two was the outlier where they just didn't play really well, especially with a 3-0 lead, which is a real shame. But now with game four in the books and a win, I do wonder how this affects the Islanders and if they come out with a lot more confidence. I would not expect Matt Martin to come back in the lineup. Not again that Ruslan Ishakov did a whole bunch to, you know, kind of bump him out of there, but they did win, and I don't think Wah is going to make a whole lot of changes based on that. Obviously, the goalie situation is settled. It's Varlamov's net until the series is over, basically. But like, what are your thoughts going into game five here? Again, we've talked about now we're feeling a lot better. The Islanders are getting a win. They played pretty well in game four. But what has made this season so frustrating and such a roller coaster, as we've talked about ad nauseum for a long time, is that we just simply don't know which team is going to show up. So let me ask you this. What do you think the odds are that the good Islanders show up for this game versus the bad Islanders showing up for this game? I think it probably leans more to the good side, but what feeling are you getting?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's the odds would suggest that the good Islanders will show up, but the real question is, will it be enough? Because you know the good Islanders have showed up in I would say eight maybe of the 14 playoff games that they played against these guys. I think if you looked at just the which team deserves to win each game, and you scratched out a series score line between these two teams in the three playoff series, you'd probably say 7-7, or maybe you could even go as far as like 8-6 Islanders or 8-6 Hurricanes, whatever you want to do. But nobody who would look at it objectively would say that it should be the Islanders should be 3-11. So that's the scary thing here. It's like the Islanders could come out, play just as well as they did in those first 6 minutes. Andersley hauls someone down, and you know that the Hurricanes are going to score on the power play. Like the Islanders didn't give up a 5-on-5 goal in game four, and it was almost not enough. They still needed two overtimes to win. They've played, I think if you looked at period by period, you know, they played two good periods in game one. They played a good first period in game two, then two abject ones. And then game three, I think you'd probably say maybe, you know, a period or two in that one. And then at least two good periods in game four. So like they played more, a lot more good periods than bad, and it just hasn't been enough. So that's the scary thing. But I think more important is just like getting that win, like gives the team like a boost. And if everyone's looking at it the same way, which is we win this one, we get the series back at home, and who knows from there, it just gets, you get to the business end of a series. Anything can happen. And the pressure definitely shifts. If the Islanders win game five, like there's no doubt the pressure shifts on the Hurricane to the Hurricanes. Like that, talk about the Islanders, like gripping their sticks a little too tight early on in the season series. Like that would hopefully be the case in game six and, you know, God forbid a game seven. But so, I mean, that's how I feel. I feel like the Islanders have the odds will be pretty stacked against them. But I think that the Islanders have proven that they're better than those odds will tell you. But at the same time, it just hasn't been enough. So most importantly is we got 2 days off, right? We got this whole Sunday and all day Monday and then all day Tuesday. So it's like that's the best part here. It's like you no matter how unlikely it is, like the Islanders can still win the Stanley Cup as of Sunday. They can still win the series as of Monday, as of Tuesday. Like they can't get eliminated before, you know, around 10 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday. And so just enjoying these kind of moments are, I'll take it.
Monday is supposed to be about 80 degrees too in New York. So enjoy it. I know it's a Monday, but do the best you can to enjoy it. I'll tell you what I'd like to see out of game five, and it's something we haven't really quite seen all all series long. And I like to see every defenseman have a good game. Like, usually it seems like for every one or two guys who've been really well, Alex Romanov has by far been their best defenseman all series long. You know, Adam Pellick has had moments where he's been good. He's had moments where he wasn't so good. Noah Dobson, you know, would come back from injury, and, you know, you got to give him a couple of days. And so he was pretty poor in, I think it was game two or game one, and maybe both, I'm not sure. Ryan Pulock was great in game four. You know, Bortuzzo obviously set up the game winner in double overtime, so you can't complain too much about his game four. He was really good. And Riley has been active. He makes things happen on the power play, which is good too. I like to see that. But it seems like there's always like one guy who's kind of like the odd man out. I'd like to see them really be able to push things and make the Hurricanes, you know, kind of work for their entries, work for their, you know, whatever power plays they're going to get. Try not to get the Islanders to give up two power play goals in game four, which is less than ideal. You know, use a bit more penalty killing there. But I'd like to see that, because I think for the most part, the forwards have been okay. I mean, even Horvat, by the way, we didn't even talk about this. Bo Horvat did a ton of great work on that double overtime shift, kind of pushing through you know, some stand-up defense there by the Canes, and then getting the puck back again at behind the net to set up to Portuzzo. So he's been good, although he only has that one goal, if I believe, back in game two. So, you know, I would love to see a full team effort. And again, talk about a cliche, but it'd be nice to get that. But unfortunately, again, like you said, they could get that. They could have the best game they've had all series long. And the way it works down in Raleigh is you get one bounce, go your against you, and the game is over. And then you got, and then they're still going to be crying about icings and, you know, missed penalty calls. By the way, somebody, who the hell was it that, oh, it was Jordan Staal, was literally water skiing behind somebody in game four, but the penalty got negated because the guy was offsides. It was, it may have been Pageau, I'm not even sure. What is that? He was still doing it. I can understand. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a couple. There's a couple that are like, guys, I it's so annoying, because the cliche is that NHL refs manage the game.
Yeah.
You know, based on the score or in playoffs, the series score line. And you're like, well, you guys are managing this game as if the Islanders are up 3-0 in the series and up 3-1, and they're playing the team that the NHL desperately needs to keep in the playoffs because of like ratings or whatever. Like, that's how it feels like this thing has been reffed a bit. But and to your point about the defenseman, I mean, if you remember back to, and this goes to the Sorokin thing as well, like, and not knowing anything, if you remember last series, Ryan Pulock was like just outstanding from the second the puck dropped in against the Hurricanes to the end of the series. Pulock was awesome. He was probably the best player for the Islanders in that entire series. Everyone's like, well, if we can get that version of Pulock, you know, for October, the Islanders are in such good shape with him and Romanov, and hopefully Dobson bounces back and Pellick stays healthy, et cetera. Like, and then it's just been, you know, Pulock's been, I think, fine, has ups, downs, and whatever. But, like, we didn't get that version of Ryan Pulock this year, because nothing is linear in hockey. So, like, you just don't know. You just have no idea what version of a guy player is ever going to show up. And it goes to the people who make these, you know, projections, and we'll get into the other series a bit now. And like, you have no idea. Like, everyone was talking about the game four between the Leafs and the Bruins, and everyone expected, oh, well, Toronto will bounce back. Like, this, it's, you know, Bob Cole had just passed away. It's going to be an emotional hockey night in Canada night in Toronto. Like, this, there's no way that this team doesn't show up. And then they didn't, like, because nobody knows. Like, you just have no idea how any hockey game or hockey season or playoff series is going to ever go. And the more and more people talk in absolutes, like, the more and more it drives me nuts, because it's you have no idea. You have no idea if Ryan Pulock is going to play like he did against the Carolina Hurricanes in a playoff series come October 14th against the Buffalo Sabres and beyond, right? Like, it's so frustrating when that stuff gets thrown around like that.
Yeah, but that's a perfect way to segue to what we also want to talk about, which was the three other series that are all 3-1. The Caps and Rangers are playing tonight, and if the Caps get an unlikely, shall we say, win over the Rangers, although they are at home again, they could be down 3-1 as well. But there's a lot of differences and kind of some similarities. Obviously, we've talked about the Islanders, you know, playing the Hurricanes maybe better than their record shows, although, again, the Hurricanes are the better team. Even Rod Brindamore said it could have been 2-2 series pretty easily. There's been one bad game and some that could have gone either way. The Lightning are now down 3-1. They were down 3-0 to the Panthers. Came out yesterday afternoon, absolutely blitzed the Panthers and won 6-3. I don't think that game was ever really all that close, although the Panthers, of course, you know, trying to take a pound of flesh every time they're out of a game, you know, so that there was a lot of hitting going on, but really the Lightning had that game. I watched part of it, and they had that game all the way. The game you were just referencing, the Leafs-Bruins series, is also 3-1 in favor of Boston, and the Leafs had every reason to come out and, you know, even the series up at home on Saturday night, Hockey Night in Canada, Bob Cole tribute, blah, 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 all that stuff. And not only did they lose, but they didn't look particularly interested. And a widely circulated GIF or video was going around of William Nylander, Mitch Marner, and Austin Matthews all arguing with one another on the bench, which is what you love to see. Nylander was something along the lines of "stop crying, bro." I don't know who he was talking to. People assume it was Marner, but who the hell knows? People ready to run Marner out of town, ready to fire Sheldon Keefe. So there's, you know, despite all being kind of in the same situation, these are all different scenarios. Like the Panthers really ran the, you know, it looked like the Panthers were going to make short work out of the Lightning, which would have been kind of shocking. So, and whoever was calling the game yesterday for the Lightning and Panthers said something. I was shocked. They were like, oh, they were ready to write the Lightning off in January. And here they are. And I was like, who was writing them off in January? Wasn't me. People were like, oh man, they're kind of down there, but yeah, they're still the Lightning. Like, who was writing them off? Did I miss something? I don't know. Who would write this team off? What are you, crazy? That's stupid. If they were writing them off, you're a moron. But that's another, I was really shocked by that. But the, obviously the Leafs Bruins thing is the most enjoyable because it's going to cause the most fires and cause the most consternation. What did you think? I mean, where do you want to start? You want to start with Bruins or you want to start with Panthers? Either way here, I don't know how much of either of these you've watched. I know you were enjoying the Leafs meltdown as much as anybody. That's probably the best birthday present of all. Forget about the Islanders winning the game, right? But for you, that
cautiously,
was it.
I'm cautiously enjoying it, right? Because as a, you know what, I, like I just said, like we have no idea. The Bruins just blew a 3-1 lead in a series last year, so we'll wait before we get too far ahead of ourselves there. But in terms of just that moment was incredible because, like I said, everybody, if you listen to any of like the Leafs coverage leading into game four, it was Nylander's back. And it was, you know, the Bob Cole thing is going to be emotional. And the team's playing well at 5-on-5. They just haven't got the saves. And every Leaf series goes this way, right? Like it's just I was talking to Staple about it once, and he said the crazy thing about the way this team's coverage is, like, everything that they make into a story is completely besides the point, which is I've been waiting for like the right way to put it, and that's what it is. It's like they focus on it was kind of like Patrick Waugh getting asked about Ruslan Ishikov yesterday,
right?
Great. He played his first NHL game. It's a cool little thing. I don't think that's the thing we should be focusing on here after the Islanders kept their season alive. But tell me about the 5 minutes you saw from Ruslan Ishikov, please. The point here is like the Leafs are down in a series 2-1, and they have all these, you know, this playoff demons, and it's that getting to the end of the road if they don't get through the first round for perhaps the coach and all this stuff. But the real story here is that the Nylander situation, the fact that they played well but haven't got the saves or the bounces, the special teams is struggling, but it should come back around, and nobody's focusing on like the point of it all. And that all went absolutely tits up in game four, which was a beautiful thing to watch. And it looked like the Leafs, like I was watching the Leafs, I'm like, wow, the Islanders would make that mistake and it'll end up in the back of their net. And it did, because like a minute left in the second period, I think Marner flubbed a play and Marchand was able to like bring it down, find Pasternak goal. And I'm like, I've seen that goal against the Islanders so many times in my life, and a lot of them against the Bruins, and a lot of them against players like Brad Marchand, and like guys, you're like, God damn it. Like, of course, why would you ever make that mistake with that guy on the ice with 30 seconds left? Just kill the period. And And then, yeah, the thing with, so that game goes the way it's going. And I'm starting to think, you know what, I feel like people are going to be like, ah, a couple mistakes. And then I start to see the vitriol come out. Like, this is the most pathetic effort I've ever seen out of this team. This is so great. And that was before the video had surfaced. So I'm like, wow, what? They're actually copping some heat here. This is great. They've lost six in a row on home ice in the playoffs. That's right. People are starting to like actually get on the case here. There's nobody saying, oh, we just got to run it back. Like the excuse train's kind of like rolling as it always does in these situations. Usually the excuse train just rolls preemptively. And this time it wasn't. And then that video surfaces and oh my God. I mean, the fact that the 5 minutes of that video coming out, people being like, hey, you might want to read this guy's lips. And then Austin Matthews not returning for the third period.
Right.
Was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun to be a part of, especially after the Islanders have won. And look, like that series isn't over, so we can't go beyond that. But in terms of like those moments were a lot of fun just to do. And then my favorite part maybe of the entire night, though, was after the game. And Sheldon Keefe said that you can question a lot of things about that game, but you can't question the effort. And just seeing every Leafs fan afterwards just be like, oh, my God. Like, are you kidding? Oh, it was so good. So, yeah, that was quite enjoyable. And to your point, like, here are three series in the Eastern Conference. None of them are tied after four games. The Rangers will likely sweep the Capitals tonight. And they do have a very different feel to them. The Islanders one kind of feels like, look, the Hurricanes are overwhelmingly likely to win the series, but the Islanders are going to make them have kind of planted their flag of we're going to make them earn it. The Lightning Panther series is just a little bit of like a backyard brawl. You think that the Panthers will probably just be too good. They've been the better team and whatever. The Mikhail Sergachev thing was a nice story. Like there are some like bubbling good feelings for both those teams. And the other one with the Bruins and Leafs is like, it's so different. It's these guys, the season's over for one of them already. We got people at Sportsnet and The Athletic already writing the end of season stuff, like the obituary, that what are we going to do after the series is over. And nobody's doing that over here. Like we're not ready to say goodbye to this team. And those guys over there, they are, which just really tells you everything you need to know about how different these things are. And I would be remiss if I didn't bring up this stat, which I texted you last night.
Oh, yeah.
And it became perhaps our favorite stat ever in the National Hockey League, which is Matt Martin did not play in Game 6. That ended a streak of 82 consecutive playoff games with him in the lineup for the Islanders, which is crazy. But that's just half the story here. Matt Martin has played 82 playoff games in his career. John Tavares has played 58.
Wow.
It's just so good.
I mean, that's the kind of stat that obviously you think about it for 1 second. You're like, well, yeah, obviously. I mean, the Islanders went on those two long runs and, you know, even that they won a round the first year. And that makes a ton of sense. But you also, it never crossed your mind. Like that the concept of this is never, obviously they played a lot of playoff games together, but like that had never crossed your mind. It's easily my favorite stat going forward. And I'm hoping that you said it was 58 games for Tavares.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully it ends at 59. Like that's all.
Yeah, exactly. and but so like you said, it's like the type of thing where you think about right away.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that makes sense. But it's like a good TV show or a good album or something. Because the more you think about it, the better it becomes.
Yeah.
Because when you start to really think about those, how stark those numbers are, well, then you get to realize, well, how many games did Tavares play with Matt Martin in the playoffs, right? Like. Because they played a bunch of them. Like, he played 24 games with Matt Martin and the New York Islanders.
Wow.
So that means that he's only played, you know, 35. And while Martin since then has played 60-something. Like, so it's something that gets better with every, the more and more you think about it. And we're close. So I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. But it was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. I mean, you sent me that and I just laughed and laughed and laughed because that is what I love to hear. But yeah, no, I don't want to get too far into it because I mean, there's a pretty good chance. Listen, game five in that series is going to be in Boston. Talk about a hostile environment. I mean, the Leafs can still win that game, but hopefully the Bruins, you know, can lock this one down. I think the thing that drives the Leafs craziest about the Bruins too is it's just like they just go about their business. Like, there's a difference between coming off as not caring and like coming in focused, taking care of your business and moving on. And I think that's what the Bruins do. Like, they, you know, there's a wrestler in AEW named Brian Cage, and he always has GMSI, which basically on his trunks, which means get my shit in. Like, he's there to get his shit in. I think the Bruins are there to get their shit in. Like, they just go in there, do the job, and get out. And this is, you know, they didn't quite do that last year in their series against the Panthers, but I think they're probably remembering. Hopefully, for the betterment of everybody, they can take this and move on, and, you know, give us, especially if it, you know, it's on Tuesday night, game five. So hopefully they can give us almost a full week's worth of fun Leafs apocalypse coming about after that. As far as the Panthers and Lightning go, I don't think, and this is not a knock on the Panthers at all, I don't think it would shock anybody if this series went seven games. Like, if the Lightning are just like, no, we're not losing this. And they just pushed it and pushed it until the Panthers just finally came out of it. But I was a little bit shocked at how quickly the Lightning went down 3-0. I was like, wait, what? It's already, yeah, they're down 3-0. But, you know, again, I don't know if that writing us off thing was just some nonsense that person. I don't remember who the play-by-play person was. I don't know if they were just making it up or listening to the Lightning talking, or they were making up something to motivate themselves. I don't know of a single person who was writing the Lightning off. Like, well, I guess that's the end of them this year. All the teams that got written off this year, I don't remember the Lightning being one of them. People were writing the Islanders off before the season even started. And we certainly wrote the Penguins off for a while there, and a bunch of other teams, and who made it even kind of you know, dicey, or the Red Wings too. But I don't remember the Lightning being written off at that point. I guess if you were rooting for Detroit, you were ready to write the Lightning off. But I just thought that was kind of silly. But yeah, we'll see. And meanwhile, over in the West, everything is 2-1. Everybody's got a chance, and Winnipeg, Colorado is going. If you haven't watched any of those games, you should, because they're highly, highly entertaining, as well as Vancouver, Nashville. I've really enjoyed those games, obviously rooting a little bit for Nashville, but those games have been a lot of fun. LA, Edmonton, kind of less so. The Kings, I was watching a little bit, and, you know, I've said it 100 times already, like, I haven't really watched a lot of hockey outside the Islanders for a while now, for a number of reasons, but watching the Kings game on Saturday night, I think it was, or was it Friday night, one or the other, I was like, wow, these guys almost play like the Islanders. Like, it's very herky-jerky. There's really not a ton of, like, flow to them. They're not bad, but their defense is a little bit weird. And it's just, it seemed like, you know, it seemed like every time Edmonton was in their zone, something bad was going to happen for the Kings. And the fact that they won their game in overtime too, you know, to kind of make it a series. And I don't think they're going to get swept or anything, but, or, you know, for the rest, I don't think they're going to just lay down. But that was the one team so far, aside from the Capitals, obviously, who have their own problems, that I thought, wow, this is almost like watching the Islanders play. I didn't mean that as a compliment. That was not really great, but you know, it's been good so far. It's been an interesting first round, even though a bunch of series could be over on Tuesday, which seems early, but you know, it's not good if you're a TV rights holder, but I think it's definitely good if you're one of those teams, and very interesting, I guess, from our perspective. So I don't know. Anything else you're seeing in any of these series before we start to wrap it up?
No, not really. Like you said, it's been fun to check in, and yeah, you know, that going, of course, like, when you go down 3-0 in a series, you just, like, shut up, and especially with the way they lost game two, like,
right.
I tried to like decompress and get away from anything that would mention the Islanders. So, like, even when I'd be watching, like, the Oilers game or whatever, they'd be like, okay, let's look around at the other series, and just mute, walk out of the room, don't want to hear it. So, yeah. But. Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah. So, well, there you go. Well, hopefully we get a few more games out of the Islanders, which would be fun, and we'll see what happens. So we will be back. We were just talking before this. We have no idea what our schedule will be like. We're going to play it by ear with the Islanders. You know, if they win on Tuesday, then, you know, maybe we'll do something, you know, that night or Wednesday if possible. If they lose, again, maybe we'll try and squeeze something in. But if they do win, chances are we'll probably just wait until Thursday's game and then see how that goes and maybe do something after that. I don't know. We'll figure it out, but I'm going to put the calendar up over at the Patreon, which is free for everybody to read. And we could update that if necessary. Speaking of the Patreon, this week is my latest Islanders book club, comes out on Tuesday. It's about one of my favorite post-Dynasty Islanders and a memoir he wrote a couple of years ago. It's a little bit of an update at one point from after the book came out, but it was pretty cool. And I thought the picture came out actually okay as well. So take a look at that over on the Patreon. You got to be a Country Club tier member, but sign up and then you can read all the book club stuff as well. That's about it. Like I said, we'll be in touch and see where we're at once the Islanders, you know, games are over. But you know, we'll play it by ear and see how it goes. And it's going to depend on how they win or lose those games too. I'm sure it's going to factor in as well. But we'll let you guys all know. So definitely follow us at Isles Anxiety Pod. Follow me at Culture of Losing if you want. Keep a look on the Patreon if you want for the calendar as well. I hope everybody enjoyed the last episode of Weird Islanders, the podcast. It's with our friend Matthew Strauss, who's the managing editor at Pitchfork. And we talked about Austin Zarnik, who, yes, is a Weird Islander that you probably already forgot played for them. But we uncovered a lot of fun facts and we had a great time talking him, talking music, talking about the heavy metal history of Billy Joel. Yes, it's true. And it's a great episode. So check it out. It came out last week. It's Weird Islanders, Austin Zarnik. Subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible.com, iHeartRadio, YouTube Music, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Our theme song is Morning Haze by Family Dinner. Hear more of their music at Bandcamp and at Spotify. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. Islanders Anxiety Podcasts are part of the Fans First Sports Network. Learn more at fansfirstsports.com. Shop vintageicehockey.com. Try wines from the Pinot Project. Mike, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at The Big Lebowski. Read and listen to his work at Action Network. Wish him a belated happy birthday. Any final thoughts on the Islanders' double overtime game four victory or the impending anxiety of game five in Raleigh on Tuesday night?
No, I just, you know, I'm always going to be grateful that this team, even if they lose on Tuesday, did give us just that hilarious moment with Robert Bortuzzo. And just thinking back to the day that they acquired him, and
right.
I think I was like laying in bed and when they made that trade official, and then it's just so funny how something like that leads to a moment, you know. It's just, you have no idea where the story's gonna pop right. or end or whatever. And the Robert Bortuzzo story, it looked like it was gonna end with the old zero goal, zero assist sweep in a playoff round. Yeah, Weird Islander, kind of a funny, tongue-in-cheek Weird Islander episode in the future. And then all of a sudden, it just took a crazy turn. And who knows? It might take another couple. So,
right.
That was I'm at least grateful for that moment. And hopefully there's a few more to come Tuesday and beyond.
That's funny. Yeah. Yeah. And to everybody who's tweeted at us, yes, the Weird Islanders Robert Bortuzzo episode is going to be insane. and is going to feature that goal in particular, which I have to remember because it wasn't his goal, unfortunately. Yes. But I don't know. Maybe there's still time. Maybe the off-ice officials would be like, you know, we've looked at this a few thousand times this weekend, and it is Bortuzzo's goal. And then we could throw a party or something. But we'll enjoy game five. We'll be back at some point. At the very least, next Sunday we'll be back. But maybe even before that, we'll see how it works out this week and where we can schedule in. And we will talk to you again then, but definitely next week at the usual time. All right. Talk to you later. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.